Welcome to The Scales of Truth with Tyson Hartley.
Welcome back. I say that to you and to me. Happy to be chatting with you again. You know, I'll admit a character flaw, that when I put together a nice comprehensive episode, as I believe that the glyphosate episode is, could be sequenced better, I know that, but I do feel like it was a pretty comprehensive episode as to for you to get the nuts and bolts of the whole situation and to hear enough about it that you don't just hear the 5 minutes and forget it. You're kind of learning along with me and seeing some of the important stuff, hearing some of the important stuff along with me, and it sticks a little bit better. You're going on that journey of discovery with me. So yes, it could have been sequenced better in a little bit more logical fashion, but I think we brought it together enough that it was a pretty good comprehensive episode that hopefully made an impression on you. If you haven't listened to that episode, please do. I do feel like I pulled it together pretty well in this day and age of seeing that there are commercials out about the idea of glyphosate and whether you should join the class action lawsuit when your first inclination is to go, yeah, those greedy lawyers. So I feel like I got to that stuff pretty well. But because of that, you know, I set the bar kind of high and trying to find that next big topic as the side hustle for me that is podcasting, even though I love it dearly, is not always easy to get back to. And I don't have an accountability partner. My cat does not give me any accountability as to getting to the things that I'd like to do. So that episode is on the way. There are several different things I'm looking at. One is around the prostate hoax. In fact, there's a book to that effect. That's one I might be covering. There are several others. A lot of my stuff is around propaganda and free speech. I don't mean that in the just rabid way. I just mean it in the descriptive sense of propaganda in the 21st century and the various ways that that occurs. Without trying to be, I'm not anti-government as to that. I'm not trying to tell you which spin I'm giving on that. I'm using that propaganda as a broad term. And there are lots of other things. But in the meantime, to get back on, I wanted to do a short episode. You've seen that I like to do sports episodes. And so that's what I'm doing today. And also tell you in the meantime that I have been working on Chemology 411. I've been mentioning that podcast. And I am a co-host over there. So please look for her on Facebook, Chemology 411, and you'll be able to find that. And just Google Chemology 411. I think she's distributed it enough. It's distributed through Anchor, but through all the various distributions that goes. A little bit different tone over there. I feel like we've got good rapport. We're starting to cover informational topics, but in a different way than I cover them. And she's the main host. I kind of help the conversation along, as well as be silly and just add some fun to the issues as well while we're going. So check out Chemology 411. I also have a Facebook presence now, and I need to start populating that more with independent stuff as opposed to just tell you when a podcast is up. But what this podcast is going to be about, purely about sports, and it's going to be about a couple of things. I hope it doesn't sound too regional. It's the NFL only, because I've actually kind of walked through this as an outline before, and it will be a little long if I go into other sports topics. So broadly, I want to talk about the NFL. More specifically, we'll cover Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs. That's my home team. And then we'll also cover that other phenomenon that is not named Patrick Mahomes. And that phenomenon is a team that is basically the best of all time dynasty, the New England Patriots, that we all hate, but we have to respect. Not all of us. Sorry, Pats fans. There are even some over in this area of the country, not far from Kansas City. They're everywhere. It's kind of like a virus. Sorry. So we'll cover that. You know, are Are they going to be another great team this year? Do they have another chance? And then we'll talk about the topic at issue in the NFL, which are these ridiculous calls lately. And why did you incorporate a rule on pass interference if you're not going to use it in any way, shape, or form, if you're going to make it totally illusory? So, you know, what's going on with the Chiefs now? That's what we'll start with. Remember, Patrick Mahomes looked for all the world like a true MVP candidate. That's because he truly deserved it. Only one other quarterback ever, and certainly not in their first year, has passed for over 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns as Mahomes did last year. He's only the third quarterback to ever hit 50 touchdowns. So he came out hot and he stayed hot the entire year. Real deal, for sure. So what's happening right now? What's happening with the Chiefs? They've now dropped a 4-2. And as a Chiefs fan, and I think as a fan of the NFL, you'll appreciate this dynamic that is Reed as a coach who's done a lot, but never even come close to, I shouldn't say never even come close, he did go to one Super Bowl, but doesn't have that last little feather in his cap that would make him a first ballot Hall of Famer. So the question becomes, what's wrong with the Chiefs? Is Kansas City and Andy Reid wasting a lottery ticket? Because that's what we fans of the Kansas City Chiefs, and those of you who've watched the NFL for the last year and six games, have come to realize. Mahomes is amazing, but what's going on? First thing I want to start with is how I think that the game planning this year has been awful. And what I mean by that is that it's like Andy Reid has decided upon getting this new toy that is Mahomes. The first year, he's like, oh my gosh, what all can this thing do? And now he just looks at him as a good quarterback. Now that we have a good quarterback back there, and I mean a top-tier quarterback, everybody loved Alex Smith as a Kansas City fan. Everybody respected the doldrums he rescued us from. Everybody likes Alex Smith. Everybody. But it was clear after four or five, and a lot of us said, hey, he's underrated. Yeah, actually, his arm's pretty good. Tyreek Hill opened him up. Now, a lot of us understood, and I believe to be the case, that Alex Smith basically got less conservative because he had such a large safety margin on that back end with Hill when he was open. And that's probably most of why he opened up his offense, but maybe not all of it. Remember, Alex Smith was very conservative, but the last couple of years of Alex Smith, he did some things, and the offense actually seemed a bit explosive. I would put that a lot towards Hill. And I would also put it towards with Hill and with Andy Reid understanding that he needed to give this offense a little bit of oomph because Alex Smith was conservative, that he tried to be creative. Do you remember 2 years ago with Hill? It seemed like the next revolutionary step in the NFL with all this pre-snap motion, because it was worth it. It opened up that offense. It made the defense less dense. It made the defense confused as to what was going on. And you got to track Hill, because if you don't track Hill, he's going to kill you. And it was so much creativity with the offense. And now it's as though that was some kind of a fever dream, because we had not seen it through six games. And I think some of the pitfall that the Chiefs fell for is this idea that, well, now you got a good quarterback back there, a top-tier quarterback, you don't need all those bells and whistles. Well, yes, but the bells and whistles, if you want to call it that, are what gave you a net plus in your offense. So if before, it's what allowed you to be a good team and a playoff team, then that's good. But now if your sights are set higher, and they are, all the Kansas City Chiefs fans understand the Super Bowl is within our sight, because last year it was in our sight, and we expect to be better this year. But now, if Reed pulls away this creativity, well, that's a net positive you're taking away for no reason under this temptation that, well, we don't need it now. Well, it's a net positive regardless. So if it's what got Alex Smith from a 65 percentile quarterback to an 80 percentile quarterback, then why not let that net positive be the reason that the Mahomes-led team goes from an exceptional team to a Super Bowl winning team, because that's what can happen if you institute that creativity, the short passes, the motion, the getting the ball to athletes in space. It's not happening. It has not been happening all year. That whole, this is incredible, revolutionary, everybody was talking about all the motion that they did pre-snap. Reed is acting like, A, it's not needed anymore, which is when it still is needed, obviously, because the defense stinks. And then B, like it was no big deal, and as long as Mahomes back there, he'll rescue you. No, you help Mahomes. He's also acting like Hill's the only person who can do it. It's like, that's not true either. So for whatever reason, he's abandoned that. It's very annoying. I would say that along with that, in-game decisions have not been good. We'll go into the details of that. But some of you Philly fans remember, and I wonder as I bring this up, whether some of you Philly fans are going to have like a flashback to Reed's mistakes when he had such a good team there with Donovan McNabb and so on. Great team that he had that nearly won the Super Bowl but went to the NFC Championship several times. Was it three or four? Finally won one, almost won the Super Bowl. I wonder you guys, because I've seen it as responses to some articles that I've read here and there. You know how sometimes extra content is actually good in the comments. And you'll see where, well, you know, welcome to our hell, says Philly fan to KC fans. This is what you get with Reed. So is Reed the problem? If you're a Philly fan, I'd be interested to hear what you say about it. Is Reed the problem? And it made me think the other day after we lost two games in a row that we shouldn't have lost. First to Indy, who's a decent team. You know, we like what they've done post Andrew Luck, but should they be beating an alleged Super Bowl contending team in Arrowhead, who knows that every single game is important so that you can host the AFC Championship game potentially against the legendary Patriots and have a chance to beat them this time, start off better, and beat them this time when you couldn't quite pull it out last year with a little bit of luck not falling on your side? Knowing that every game is important to keep up with the Patriots and that you have a head-to-head, the Chiefs are motivated every single week. And yet, what if instead of Mahomes and Hill pulling Reed out of his shell, it's that he turns Mahomes into Alex Smith? That is my nightmare. I wake up in a cold sweat. I scream. What if the change is that Reed has more momentum and more influence and he turns Mahomes into Alex Smith? Now, of course, I don't mean that literally, I shouldn't even say to the extreme sense, figuratively. Mahomes is too far past Alex Smith in tendencies and abilities and processor speed. As smart as Alex Smith was, Mahomes is clearly his processors at a different level. So he's not going to retreat back to Alex Smith outlook or anything like that. Alex Smith's most touchdowns were like 28, 27, 26 in a season. It's not going to go to that. But if he goes towards that continuum, you're wasting your lottery ticket. What I consider Mahomes is Kansas City won the lottery ticket. If he goes towards that end because Reed has this conservative mental outlook and because of it, games are closer and Mahomes goes towards Texas Tech, but then because he's going towards Texas Tech because things are closer, then he's sloppier, then Reed tries to pull him in more. If Reed wins, and instead of Mahomes pulling Reed out of his shell, Reed pulls Mahomes into his shell, that's bad. I mean, that is a total waste of the next 10 years. I don't think it's going to happen, but again, it's the matter of the continuum, the direction, not the degree. And you need to let the most natural, apparently from his first starting season, gunslinger, yet safe gunslinger, that the NFL has ever seen to be who he is. Work on his fundamentals. We'll get to that later, because one could say, just to tease this, that he's regressed. Okay, Kansas City fans, don't freak out. That has a literal meaning, and it has a relative meaning. Okay, so it has a meaning that kind of implies something else. Literally, you could talk about whether or not he's regressed. We'll get to that later. But what I want to talk to you about, as far as if Reed is the problem, is remember 2013, 2014, the playoffs that year, the Chiefs lose a 38-10 lead over the Colts to lose 44-45. That is that the Chiefs score only another 6 points after that, and the Colts score 35. They lose a 28-point lead to lose to the Colts 44-45, and that was in a playoff game. So that's your first, if Reed is the problem even now. Now, in 17-18 in the playoffs, recall that the Chiefs had an 18-point lead at halftime, 21-3, and they lose to the Titans 22-21. They don't score another point. The Titans somehow score 19 more points, and the Chiefs lose to them. So was that Smith or was it Reed? Was it Reed's game calling? I would argue the latter is at least something to do with it, not just Alex Smith. Now, the last 2 weeks, we've seen a similarity. After coming to a 4-0 record, the Chiefs, getting two home games, proceed to lose both of those home games. So recall that in the last 2 weeks, with both of those losses at home, the Chiefs have run horribly, and worse, ran in bad situations for a team that's running horribly and has the 50-touchdown, something like 14-interception, last year's MVP back there, who's shown himself to be quite capable of throwing the ball, he says in the understatement of the year. On 2nd and 10 in those two games, the Chiefs ran the ball 5 times on 2nd and 10 or more, for a total of, wait for it, 9 yards. 9 whole yards. Averaging less than 2 yards a time. But what's worse is, obviously, that timing tells that tells you a little bit of the timing. 2nd and 10. You've got the MVP quarterback back there. He averages over 8 yards per pass attempt. If he can't get, you give him 2 out of 3 shots, if necessary. And if it's 2nd and 10, it means the first one wasn't successful, or you ran it then too, which means you consider the 2 out of 3 shots before 4th down is 2nd down and 3rd down. Now, a 2nd down gets you some yards, so now you're ahead of the chains again. Sure, you mix it up, or you do some kind of a running alternative. But 2nd and 10 or longer, and they ran 5 times for a total of 9 yards. Needless to say, nowhere near as much as they needed. This included the week six game against the Texans, when they were down by 7 and only had about 6.5 minutes to respond with a leaky defense that was allowing run drives down their throat and to take all kinds of time off the clock. So down by 7 against the Texans on the necessary drive to respond with a score, it was 2nd and 14. On the first, Mahomes had dumped it off to McCoy in the backfield, if you recall. That's how they got to 2nd and 14. So that's way back on their 25-yard line to begin with, on the Chiefs' 25. They got 75 yards to go. A drive that they must respond with. And instead, they dump it to McCoy for minus 4 yards. And on second, they hand it off to McCoy. Now, both Houston's top 2 corners are out And the Chiefs have had, for the game, get 53 yards of total rushing. I don't know if they had hardly any more after that. I think that may have been practically, basically their last effort. And then I believe Houston ran the clock out with over five minutes to go. So 53 yards total rushing included a 17-yarder. So subtract that 17-yarder, you've got 36 total yards of rushing. Now, granted, they didn't run a lot, but they attempted a lot more than they did during the previous game. So 36 total yards of rushing, and on your drive where you need to get some first downs, get the ball moved down the field so that Mahomes can start taking shots, you on a second and 14, go ahead and just hand off to McCoy with Houston's two top corners out, and he gets basically nothing. And then in the Indy game in week 5, recall they were down 6 with 6:38 left at home. It's a second and 30. The reason it's a second and 30 is because Mahomes gets 5 yards on the first down, but it gets called back because the receiver is accused of hands to the face or grabbing the face mask, and he didn't grab it. But that puts him back, and then after that, Mahomes gets dumped, gets sacked. So they're now back on their 5-yard line, if you recall. So here they are. They only end up running for a total of 36 yards for the game. And in fact, 14 of those are by Mahomes after this particular instance that I'm telling you about. So to that point, they'd only ran for 22 yards. And now they're on a second and 30 from their own 5. Down 6. They need to move. Because they know, again, everybody's been going for it on 4th, and everybody's been trying to run it down their throat. The obvious strategy is to try to take 6 to 7 to 8 to 10 to 12 minutes off the clock with each drive. So you need to score now. And on 2nd and 30, a game where they ran for 36 yards total, even if you include the yardage even after this, and McCoy literally never got the ball as a runner, even though Damian Williams averaged only 2.6 yards. They get to 3rd and 28 because on 2nd and 30, Mahomes gets, well, they try to run the ball. They get 2 yards, 2nd and 30. On 3rd and 28, Mahomes almost gets them out of the hole. So Mr. 3rd and long comes to the rescue. Because if you recall, what was amazing about Mahomes last year, and particularly amazing for Chiefs fans, but certainly amazing for anybody who watched much of Mahomes, was that he would look at a 3rd and 14 like as a 3rd and 4. He didn't care. I mean, if he said I can probably pick that up. I mean, as it played out, I might as well try this 3rd and 14. It's a decent shot, and what good is throwing it for 4 yards like Smith would do for me? I might as well see if I can pick this up. Worst case, we punt. And he didn't have any problem with those. So Mahomes pulls a rabbit out of his hat on 3rd and 28, nearly gets him out of the hole, except for offsetting penalties. He doesn't complete the ball, but he sees the receiver that's the right one to throw it to. The guy's held. He understands it's offensive pass interference, but that gets offset. So if not for the offset, they've got a first down. So Mahomes, through the passing game, has rescued you. But they're offsetting calls, and they have to play 3rd and 28 again. Mahomes just sacked 2 plays before, seemingly not very mobile, still gets out of the pocket, throws the ball to Pringle to get them to a 4th and 1. So, again, 2 plays in a row and 3 out of 4 if he's not sacked, where he has a completion or a good call through the passing game to make good yardage. And what do they do on 4th and 1? They run the ball and they don't pick it up. So, for me, this season is potentially looks like a macrocosm. Okay, now usually you hear the opposite, don't you? You hear microcosm. You look at a particular instance and you say, this is a microcosm of the whole year. It's just they haven't been able to run the ball, blah, 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 blah. And you say, this quarter and this game is like it's been all year. It's a microcosm of it. It's a smaller version of it. But it's almost like this season is a macrocosm, a larger version of these games where Andy Reid gets ahead, has something to lose. It looks like things are going well, but he has something to lose. And then he just goes turtle in shell. You know, pulls his aggressiveness in, tries to defend himself. You know, there are high expectations, just like being ahead by 30 points or 28 points in a playoff game. The great start is just these expectations, knowing you've got this MVP. That's that great start. This MVP can take you places. You know you've got a Maserati, and you just need to take it out on the interstate instead of keeping it on the surface roads and the street roads with all the stoplights and the whole 30-mile-an-hour speed limit. You know you've got that head start with that quarterback. You've got those high expectations. Success is on the horizon. Just like those two playoff games where you had a big lead. Success is right there for the taking. And yet this season seems like a macrocosm of some of those games. Because literally, as the victory margins in sequence, 14 in the first game, then 10, then 5, then 4, then minus 6, then minus 7. Let me read those. Perfect sequence. 14-point victory margin, then 10, then 5, then 4, then minus 6, then minus 7. Listen, I'm aware that Mahomes has injury issues, but still, I feel like even if you game plan around it, he's shown to be able, and you can go look it up. Go look on Arrowhead Pride. They do a great analysis, but other people have done this too. You've seen these graphics if you just remember. He's good when he doesn't have time, if he gets it out of his hands. It's not like that's a real weakness. You just have to have a game plan to get it out of his hands quickly. He's good if he doesn't get it out of his hands. So if he's a little banged up, you just go to the game plan of getting it out of his hands. Be more creative, work it, and he will be able to do it. But literally, victory margins and sequence. Oh no, we have something to lose. Oh boy, we've had success. 14, 10, 5, 4, minus 6, minus 7. That clapping sound you hear is Andy's sphincter. So another way of looking at this is that I feel like the team thought, you know what, we went through that wild period of an undomesticated offense where we needed to do special things. We needed to be extra creative, both through the Alex Smith, end of the Alex Smith era, where we got better and better. And every Kansas City fan likes Alex Smith. Everybody does. It's just the difference between seeing him. You know, it's like when you look to see if something. Here's my analogy. As a male, I can tell you that a glimpse into the male mind. You'll see a woman who might be gorgeous. You'll see her from half a block away, and you'll evaluate. You'll go, is that a gorgeous woman? I'm pretty sure that's a gorgeous woman. From here, that looks like that's probably like a dime, like a 10 out of 10. None of this 1,000%. It's 100%. It's a dime or near so. 95th percentile. And you go, but I'm not sure yet. But I'm going to keep looking. So she gets closer and you go, you know what? Better evidence yet. This is definitely on track to being a potential 95 percentile or better. And then she walks by you, and you go, okay, that was close up. That was definitely a dime. Definitely 95th percentile or better. And then, of course, you look back as she walks away. And you go, and that just sealed it. So Kansas City fans were happy with Alex Smith. You know, pretty girlfriend, steady. Nothing to complain about. And then we see Mahomes, see it through the first game, see it through the second game, and go, wait a second. Is that a 10? That looks like a 10, but I haven't quite seen enough yet. By the fifth game, we knew, right? We knew. So everybody knew. If you're watching closely, you said, this is not a mirage. These are not beer goggles here. It is not dark. And it's not like I'm not wearing my glasses or anything like that. This is not a mirage. We have enough evidence now. This is 20/20 vision. This is an incredible quarterback. So we knew about that. And through that time period before, we are using Tyreek Hill and so on in this uncivilized fashion, if you will. Okay. In order to really make this team better, we've got to be super creative, as I mentioned earlier. And now it feels like part of the problem with Kansas City is that they've gotten lazy with their game planning and their creativity, and they've tried to civilize it. Well, look, we've got an elite quarterback back there. We just let him, just give him a straight game plan, and he'll be able to do it. And the other idea is Brett Veach, a general manager, smartest man in the room. I just turned that into a verb over the offseason, and said, you know what? We're going to change this defense too, and I'm going to do all the right moves. And unfortunately, what he did was get rid of two elite defenders, two guys that have skill sets that are exceptional compared to most anybody, one in particular. Dee Ford would go around that corner and get so close to sacking a quarterback about five times as many times as he actually did, and he had a good number of sacks. There would be so many plays where you go, man, he almost got him again. I can't believe how he sprints around there like a like an Olympic sprinter and almost gets back his, by his offensive lineman all the time. Get rid of him. Don't need him. No, don't need him. You know, we got to do a full sale change. So Brett Veach, smartest man in the room, gets rid of him, gets rid of Justin Houston. You end up having exactly one elite defender left. That's Chris Jones, which means you don't got margin for error if one of those three guys get hurt. It's because you only got one guy. And then you got Frank Clark. I don't think any of us are really irritated by Frank Clark yet. But he hasn't done much. Some people say it's, you know, maybe he's too consumed by the leadership aspect, and he doesn't really need to do that because he just needs to work on his game. And if that he does that enough, that's enough leadership. And none of us have any problem with Tyrann Mathieu at this point. But honestly, part of the idea was that, okay, well, we'll have that better defense. So as long as the defense is better, if they're even top 15, the offense will be good. We're great. So we try to civilize this quarterback, but we're not paying attention to what's in front of us. That the defense is not better. They're better on the scoreboard as far as points allowed, but is that really a good indication? Because this year, more so than last year even, these teams are saying, listen, we don't have the quarterback that those guys got, so we have to take chances. And even last year, some of the game plan was give them less possessions, because on any given possession, they're going to score more points on average than we are. So the only way to help pull that back is to have fewer possessions, because a differential per drive times more drives means you're further behind. So it makes sense to decrease the number of drives. So we know this. By the same token, we know that they're going to go for it on fourth. Many teams have done it more than usual when they played us already. And with all that, the defense is better on the scoreboard because it's less possessions. So are they really any better when the possessions are also running possessions? So they're trying to take the time off the clock. So less possessions fit in a particular 60 minutes. So they're civilizing this offense as though that's all they need to do. And it's clearly not. We were 6-0 last year. We weren't 4-2. Mahomes is hurt. So if you want to say that, that's another reason not to civilize the offense. We're not able to rely on the defense at this moment. And we've got more injuries. So don't civilize it. So next mini topic I want to talk about here, regression. Yes, it's actually come up. Kind of crazy, right? Patrick Mahomes, did he regress? Well, anybody who saw last year said, okay, he's still a great quarterback. It would be pretty small percentage that he would regress back to an average quarterback. You don't throw 50 touchdowns and be an average quarterback. You don't specifically don't throw 50 touchdowns and have only 14 interceptions or something like that. It was better than 3-1. So, you know, it's one thing to take just a massive number of risks, but just be, you know, plus 15 on your touchdowns to interceptions. But he was, you know, plus 44 or something like that, plus 46, something like that, which has almost never been done. So the chances were very low that he would regress in the broader term. Kansas City Chiefs fans, relax. I don't mean that by regression that he's a bad quarterback. That's obviously not the case. We don't expect he'll come back to be a bad quarterback. And by suggesting whether or not he's regressed, that's not what I'm suggesting. Regression in its literal sense just means, is he not better? Is he not playing as well? Is he showing some fundamental flaws that he didn't show? Those types of things. I would argue he has been. The big question is how much of that is his ankle? Because at sometimes you feel like, okay, well, it's probably his ankle. He didn't step into it. But on the other hand, you'll see him then, you know, sprint out to get away from the offensive pressure. And sometimes it seems like they're purposely doing it. And he's able to complete passes. And it seems like he's, you know, running, moving pretty good. So is it really true that he can't step forward? Or is it that his fundamentals aren't as good? Because something that he did last year that you're not seeing this year was this incredible accuracy where people are getting the ball right where they need to. I still think his accuracy is fine, but it's not so exceptional. If you remember the days of the 49ers, you would see Jerry Rice was never the fastest track guy, but he'd get the ball right where he needed in stride, and all of a sudden he had enough room. So there are two things that are exceptional about Mahomes that I'm thinking of right now. And one, as far as where you could see this guy's different, it's that he had the processor to go, not just is this guy open, but is this guy who is open also the guy who has the best shot at having the most green in front of him for a giant play? There could be more than one guy open, but what you would see last year is Mahomes saying, okay, yeah, but this guy has the most green in front of him. Can I get it to him? I can. So this year, he's not getting to those guys quite in stride, and he's missing. He's just straight up missing more throws than he missed last year. So I think it's possible that he's regressed in the small sense, in the literal sense. But as to this idea that there's any possibility that he's not a good quarterback, that he's not a decade-long leader, that's hogwash. Because if you think of last year and just how statistically anomalous this was, I just want to bring up a few things. The Chiefs allowed 26.3 last year. They were plus 9 on that, though. They got 35.3 points. Now, that 35.3 points was third behind the 2013 Colts all time, with that Patriots team from the Randy Moss days stacked in between that, 37.9 of the Colts and the 35.3 of Kansas City. But of those top 30 highest scoring teams for regular season average, that is the second worst allowed. The top being the 2000 Rams that lost in the first round. They lost in the first round. That team allowed 29.4. They were only plus 4.4. In other words, they only scored 4.4 more points than they allowed per game. They only were 10-6. But remember, the Chiefs went 12-4 and got all the way to the conference championship game. So that tells you something about Mahomes that says it's not just an anomaly. And also remember that Mahomes still leads the league in total passing yards through 6 weeks. A drop back. Okay, he's really average. It was just kind of an illusion. Because remember, an illusion would be a guy has who usually gets 24 touchdowns has 36 or 37. Or a rookie who wins a lot, is it really him winning? Or is it because he's doing okay? You know, he gets 21 touchdowns. And then the next year he drops off to 15 and the defense can't quite hold him as well. And so they don't win as much. No, it's 50 touchdowns, guys. And so when you're leading the league in total passing yards through 6 games and you're on pace still, even with a couple bad games, to shatter the all-time passing yards mark. Now, whether he gets it or not is not the case, but right now he's still in the air, but up in the air. But he's at least still on pace through 6 games, one third of the season, to shatter it. He's still on pace for better than 6,000 yards, and the record is something like 5,100-something by Peyton Manning. It may be 5,200, but even so, he's well above that. So he has a chance to drop off a little bit. And do we think he's going to drop off if that ankle gets better? Not necessarily. So second place in the total passing yards right now is Ryan. Well, that's a seasoned veteran, right? Been around a long time. And yet Mahomes leads him, even with Hill on the sidelines for all but one of these games. He got hurt sometime during the first game, but it was pretty early. So he's been on the field for only one complete game out of six. And Ryan, the seasoned veteran, has six more interceptions. He's got seven to Mahomes' one. Second in total TDs right now is Mahomes through six games. He's got 14, tied with Wilson, and Ryan has 15 through six games. Wilson, also another seasoned veteran, who is having an MVP calendar year, and he has zero interceptions versus Mahomes' one. Now remember, that puts them both on pace for 42. Nothing wrong with that. A lot of us expected, it's such a statistically anomalous season to get 50, that if you just get 35 to 40, that's still showing you to be a top-tier quarterback, so long as your interceptions don't go way up. So second in total yards, in total touchdowns, to Ryan, who has one more, but Ryan has a lot more interceptions. And Mahomes is highest in yards per attempt, and he's the third best in interception percentage. Now, that's not regarding whether someone's doing well as far as touchdowns or as pass yards or touchdowns and interceptions. It's just saying, how often are you? Some of these guys are a lot more safe, but they're no more near as productive, but they're also just not turning it over. Think Alex Smith, right? Think Aaron Rodgers. So even with his drop back year in some ways, he's still third best in interception percentage. And he's also second in pass rating to this point. So he's not regressed. Okay, next topic really quickly is to go to the other phenomenon, not named Patrick, but the team that is a phenomenon that starts with Pat. That is the Patriots. The Patriots, right? It's like, oh my gosh, seriously? Seriously? 6-0 again? Seriously? As an AFC team's fan, you know, that drives me crazy. But yeah, so is Brady going to last year of Peyton his way to another dang Super Bowl? Now, Pats fans, relax. By that, I don't mean that Brady is on the level of Peyton's last year of spaghetti armedness. Probably not a word, but you know what I mean. Peyton spaghetti armed his way to a Super Bowl, but the point being, because the defense peaked at an all-time level, right? And I think part of that, and so is Tom Brady going to get that treatment? Now, again, Tom Brady can play, but he doesn't seem to be peak Tom Brady. He seems to be good Tom Brady, because Brady's always good. Seems to be able to get plays when he needs to. But is he going to now, of all the different ways he's won, he's going to go back to the original one where the defense carried him? Or mostly carried him? Because that's going to be annoying, right? So to that point then, is the Pats defense performing at an all-time level? Kind of seems like it, right? Now, granted, it's early. We all know they're in the AFC least, but that's their advantage everywhere. Every year, they get to play in the AFC least. And, you know, now maybe the Jets will start to be a little bit better now that their QB's back. But, you know, they got to play the Miami, who's having an all-time bad year, at least to this point. They beat Buffalo overall from year to year. That's probably as easy of a division that any usual contender gets. And so, yes, we understand that they've had a particularly easy start. But nonetheless, this defense has been ridiculous. 58 total points allowed through six games, so less than 10 points a game. Now, is that on an all-time level? Well, granted, it's only one-third of the way through the season. But on the other hand, it's not only a few games. It is one-third of the way through the season. And if you go to mcubed.net, you can see this. Other places, too. I was on the way to looking for scoring margin or scoring differential, whatever you want to call it. It's not super easy to find. So in the meantime, I found this. It's points allowed, right? So on mcubed.net, only four times did teams allow less than 10 points a game. All four of those times were during 14-game regular seasons. So before we went to 16 games, which happened something like in 78, I forget exactly. Not that it's huge, but wanted to point that out, in that maybe it's harder for that defense to stay as focused, for 16 games than for 14. You know, injuries can happen, so on and so forth. So they did all happen to happen during the 14-game seasons, 77 Falcons, the 69 Vikings, the 75 Rams, the 76 Steelers, all allowed less than 10 points a game, and then the Patriots, at least so far through six games. None of those teams won the Super Bowl. The other thing about the Pats defense currently is that they're plus 10 on interceptions through six games. I feel though like they're getting some of that peak San Francisco defense with all their Seattle defense with all their stars. They're getting that treatment, or because they have such a good reputation, they're allowed to do a lot more contact. I know I haven't watched all the Patriots games, but some of them I've watched, I suspect they're getting away with that. And you recall a couple of, was it the Thursday game? Or what game was it? Maybe it was two Pats games ago where the defender was, it was on Golden Tate. And Golden Tate both got held within the first 5 yards. And then he also got, the defensive back got there way early, and they didn't turn over the call. So, worse, why did they not see it live? We'll go to that on as a last topic regarding bad calls, non-reversals, which will happen soon. But also a measurement as to the Pats' all-time scoring margin for the NFL as regards whether or not they're performing at an all-time level. So right now they're plus 23.7. You know, you look at the games and some of these games, I watched the Jets game against the Pats, and you go, you know what? I feel like the Jets are staying pretty spirited on defense. And that held true this last game when Dallas lost to them. I said, now, but even that game where it seems like the Jets defense stayed pretty spirited, it still ended up being like 33-7. By the end of it, it just things happen. The Pats defense happen, and then Brady does a couple things, and some things go well. Before you know it, they've beat the snot out of them. The Pats have beat the snot out of the Jets. So through six games, they're up 20. They're 23.7 positive on the positive side for scoring margin. Now I found a 2016 Reddit thread about this, and it said the 07 Patriots were 19.6. So right now through six games, these Pats are well above that. And per the same thread, over 11 games, the Bears, in 1942, so way back, were plus 26.5, but they lost in the championship game, as did those 07 Patriots, if you recall. So right now, they're on pace to be an all-time team as far as defense. So one wonders whether it's going to be like that Broncos team where Peyton got that Super Bowl very much by riding the coattails of the defense. Now, again, no one's as spaghetti-armed in the league as Peyton was that year. He was entirely shot. But his presence, people realizing this is a true professional. We have a Hall of Fame quarterback here. We need to take advantage of every opportunity because it's all before us. Kind of like the Chiefs receivers know they got to keep running. And hopefully anybody who comes into Kansas City knows it's all before us, especially if we win one, if the Chiefs win one. So the atmosphere in the building is different when you've got one of those quarterbacks, right? And it could be a desperation thing. Just it may have been during Denver, too. It's like this guy prepares like nobody's business. We don't want to embarrass him. We also want his legacy to be better. And we could be a part of that and get a Super Bowl on the way. Same thing for Tom Brady. I know he says he's going to play till he's 45, but he's 42 now. You don't know when it's going to end for sure. It could be one bad injury away, but you also know with that organization that you can win this year. So everybody stays focused, I think, partially because of that in that building. Not just because Belichick's a genius, he is. not just because he's got a unique relationship and Tom Brady works as hard as anybody and all that stuff, but because they are in a room with all of that. They're in the building with all that, and everybody else tries that much harder. Seeing that as a prize they can actually get to, because of that, the defense is always so good, they game plan. But this year, they're just on just an amazing level. And it's like every single year, as much as we all want to hate the Pats, we also are just kind of like amazed by them. We have Pats fans over in this direction, not far from Kansas City. Also annoying. But, you know, every year it's something different somehow. They had that stretch where I said, don't worry. Once they get to the playoffs, someone will be able to rush them and they'll be able to stop them one game. And that happened for like 9 to 10 years. Then all of a sudden, Pat's dynasty is better than it was on the front end of the dynasty. It's kind of ridiculous, right? Last thing I want to talk about as far as the sports topic. And again, thank you for listening to the Scales of Truth. This is just a sports topic, but we are going to get to the serious ones. Just kind of wanted to exercise the old muscles as far as this goes. Is going to be these non-calls, these bad calls, these non-reversals. So, you know, every single week it seems like it's at a peak that's going to be non-sustainable. You go, really? That call? Like the Patriots calls I just, mentioned with Golden Tate getting just mugged and then them challenging it and not getting the call. The Patriots getting away with that defensive holding and pass interference. So, by the way, it's late. Little yawn there. Early in the morning, on the morning of 10/16/19. So, yeah, you know, after New Orleans loses their chance to go to the Super Bowl because the Rams mug their receiver well before the ball gets there in the end zone, they institute this rule on, you know, being people who understand English to supposedly mean what it actually says. It turns out the NFL is using the language of the rule the way the Soviet Union used to talk about things and the way George Orwell means words to, you know, his visions had words meaning, right? I mean, here people thought that it meant that you can challenge pass interference, and since they'll review it, they'll look at it, and if it really was pass interference, then they will call pass interference even if it wasn't called on the field. Of course, it turns out that's just not true. And I think it's practically scandalous. People are not liking it in any way, shape, or form. And especially, we've got to be careful because the NBA has this problem too, right? Like a foul's a foul if it's the defender. A foul's not a foul. Something might be a foul if it's a defender going against a superstar. And by the same token, something may not be a foul if the person who possibly is committing a foul is a superstar. And we saw so far probably the worst version of this in this Monday night game, Game 6, Detroit versus Green Bay at Green Bay, with both of them having a lot on the line, division, record in general. And we saw those three calls that were just oblivious. So it turns out then that the refs must be new to the three-dimensional world, because there were two calls on the defensive lineman, the name escaping me at the time, where he put his hands up on the chest and then the shoulder of the offensive lineman, and the referee, without a good view, assumes that the guy's hand is on the offensive lineman's face, and it's not. I feel like I could do the old put my head sideways compared to your review and make it look like I've pushed my finger all the way up my nose trick with these referees. Because, you know, it turns out in the real world, wait for it, something could intersect with something else visually. It doesn't mean it's actually touching. Hey, refs, guess what? If you're on one side of the street and you're looking across the street, and on the other side of the street, there's someone walking left or right on a sidewalk, And then on the street, a car goes 50 miles an hour from the right to the left. It doesn't mean that the guy you saw walking from left to right just got hit by that car. Did you think that was a miracle that they're still walking? Whoa, we went right through that car. Holy cow, did you see it? Yeah, so in the three-dimensional world, see, things can be appear to be touching without touching. And then so you should pay attention to that phenomenon and be careful before you say that something was touching if you really can't tell from your vantage point. So, of course, the first time it's that the guy's hand is only on the top part of the offensive player's chest plate. And then they interview the guy. Name just escaping me. It's a well-known defensive player. And he says, oh, well, he said, I didn't think that was a foul. But to make it more clear, I went ahead and deliberately starting putting my hand on the offensive lineman's right shoulder, my left arm on his right shoulder. Well, guess what? From the vantage point, car going from right to left and the guy walking on the sidewalk behind. Oh, my gosh. Somehow, it looks like they're touching, except there was, you know, no one flew up in the air. So from the vantage point, the left hand is on the back, is behind the offensive lineman's head and his left shoulder. So again, the vantage point is not good, and they call it anyway. And both of these are at times where this is a close enough game that it would have stalled the Green Bay's drive, and the Lions would have gotten it back with a chance to put together a drive. And in fact, I think they end up losing by 6 or something. At least at the time, it was close. If both of those go Green Bay's way, and I can't remember if they scored on one or both. Excuse me, both of those go Detroit's way. They got a chance to just go 2 field goals. They don't even have to finish the drive. And then, of course, later on, where the Green Bay defensive back gets his arm across the receiver's front from shoulder to shoulder across his chest plate. They're early, definitely early, before the ball gets there, and it does not get called. And it's like, is this favoritism? Because if you're not going to use the new rule, and then you also give favoritism, then you're no better than you were last year. I know you could say, well, what? That wasn't favoritism. If anybody was going to get favoritism, the New Orleans would, because it's Drew Brees. I gotcha. But you know what I mean? That what good is a rule if it really goes back to whether you're going to call it right to begin with, and you're not going to allow the review to overturn anything. So it's an interesting time with these bad calls and non-calls and non-reversals. And I think the NFL has looked like a joke for about 3 weeks running. And I don't understand why you have a rule that you don't follow. Is this the Soviet Union? Oh, yes, our economy is doing great. People are in bread lines. You know, is this George Orwell? Oh, no. 2 + 2 = 5. I'm an Orwell fan, by the way. It's like, oh, no. See how that pass interference happened? We will now let you see extra evidence that the pass interference happened. We will purport to review said pass interference. We will gaslight you to think that you're crazy to think there was pass interference, and say specifically that there was not pass interference. It's a crazy time in the NFL. You know, it's like they're using political language. It's so nutsoid. So we'll see where that goes. But it's an interesting NFL season regardless, right? So I've got some things that we will cover as serious topics, but that about wraps up this week's topic. One thing I'm looking at is the prostate hoax. You can, if you want to go down that path, that's great. But I'm going to call it the prostate test hoax. And it's a black and white issue, and it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Medical complex, kind of like the glyphosate thing, are like these referees saying, the facts before you do not mean what the facts say. Ignore those facts. Gaslight you. Get you to do these products that have been shown to be not even indicative. Believe these tests. Do these invasive measures. It's, after all, your life depends on it. Unless your test can't be believed. So that's one I'll probably cover. It's pretty straightforward. So look for that. Yeah, got some other ones too. Trying to see if I can see some of my notes on some of the things I thought I would do. That's a big one though. We'll go with that one. I've definitely got some other ones. I just don't have any immediately right here listed. But definitely have some saved, just not on this particular list. So thanks for listening. And again, go ahead and listen to me on Chemology 411, where I'm helping co-host that. We have another one in that just dropped this last Tuesday, 10/14. So that's our second regular episode after we had an introductory episode. And we even have what we call, she's going to get me on this, excursions. So if we feel like something is slightly off schedule, but we still feel like we're going to have a fun time going down that rabbit hole or off on that detour, we're calling that an excursion, and we're going off over there on that excursion. So check those out. Chemology 411. For me, the Scales of Truth is through Audio Boom and through those distribution channels. There are several, but if you just, at this point, I believe if you were to Google the Scales of Truth and Tyson Harley, it should just show you those, at least one of them, including Google Podcasts is eventually supposed to pick it up. Same with Kim's podcast. If you Google it at this point, she started it through Anchor, but that has distribution channels. I started mine through SoundCloud, and you can see all but the last episode on SoundCloud, and I ran out of room, decided to go over to Audio Boom, which then distributes it to various places. So check me out there. Also check out the Facebook presence, Tyson Harley. You can see that directly. There are other Tyson Harleys around, by the way, but I think mine's the only one that's a page as opposed to just a person. And you can also then find me if you go look for that Chemology, where there is a closed group if you'd like to join that group. Okay, well, that's it for now. Try to get serious episode going, but I do love doing the sports stuff. I mean, sports talk is really a love for me. I mean, I listen to sports talk a lot. So like to have those opinions about something not very important, even though I do definitely want to get to my important topics too. So thanks for listening. Feel free to just comment over on my Facebook page. I do not have a Twitter, but comment there. Just bring up things you'd like to know. That it is moderated, so I'll see your comments first. But anything that's not just totally uncivilized, I would go ahead and allow on that page. So say what you will over there. You can refer to the episode if you like, but no big deal if you don't. We can start a conversation over there. If you have some ideas on what you'd like me to cover, you can also go over there as well and drop me a line. Just put it on the page there and let me know if there's some things you'd like to cover. Give me some kind of leads as to interesting things around previous things I've said or anything to that effect. All right, everybody. Have a good one. Thanks for listening. Be safe.
You've been listening to The Scales of Truth with Tyson Harley.